Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Right after Donald Trump announced that he chose Ohio's new Republican Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate, today's guest, Robert Reich, posted this video.
Donald Trump is
portraying... My God, what an idiot. A moral disaster.
That's what J.D. Vance used to say about Donald Trump.
I'm a never Trump guy. I never liked him.
But Vance stands for nothing except gaining power. Trump picked him for vice president because he has publicly said he'd do what Mike Pence refused to do, overturn democracy to place America under MAGA control.
Had you been vice president on January 6th, would you have certified the election results?
If I had been vice president, I would have told the states like Pennsylvania, Georgia, and so many others that we needed to have multiple slates of electors, and I think the U.S. Congress should have fought over it from there.
A vice president Vance is one more reason why a second Trump term would be far more dangerous than the first.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich regularly posts videos about current events and politics. They have been seen by hundreds of thousands of people. Here is one he posted on July 9th about the rise of Christian nationalism.
Donald Trump is portraying himself as a religious savior. He says Election Day will be
Christian Visibility Day.
Trump has repeatedly compared his criminal trials to the crucifixion of Jesus. Promoted videos calling his re-election, quote, the most important moment in human history, and that describe him as a divinely appointed ruler.
A shepherd to mankind who won't ever leave nor forsake them. So God made Trump.
He claims to be a holy warrior against an imaginary attack on Christianity.
They want to tear down crosses, but no one will be touching the cross of Christ under the Trump administration, I swear to you.
He's even selling his own version of the Bible.
We must make America pray again.
Trump is playing to a rising white Christian nationalist movement within the Republican Party.
I say it proudly. We should be Christian nationalists.
Christian nationalists believe that the law of the land is not the Constitution, but instead the law of God, as they interpret it. Trump supporters are increasingly overt in their calls to replace democracy with a MAGA theocracy.
The church is supposed to direct the government. And I'm tired of this separation of church and state junk.
We're meant to be a Christian nation. We should be a Christian nation.
Welcome to the end of democracy. We're here to overthrow it completely. We didn't get all the way there on January 6th, but we will endeavor to get rid of it and replace it with this right here.
That was a cross he was holding. The idea that the will of voters is irrelevant because God has anointed Trump was a recurring message in the efforts to overturn the 2020 election.
Because it is not Joe Biden that rules this country. Jesus Christ is the king of everything. Woo!
In previous videos, I've highlighted how MAGA Republicans have embraced core elements of fascism. The combination of fascism and Christian nationalism is called Christofascism, a term first used half a century ago by the theologian Dorothy Zola. Fascists rise to power by characterizing their opponents as subhuman. Christofascists take it a step further by casting opponents as not just subhuman, but actually demonic.
People like Nancy Pelosi, she's a demon.
Framing opponents as enemies of God makes violence against them not only seem justifiable, but divinely sanctioned and almost inevitable.
We are going to put on the armor of God. Yeah! And maybe strap on a Glock on the side of us just in case.
In case you didn't hear the end of that, that was Carrie Lake, who's running for the Senate in Arizona, say, and maybe strap on a Glock on the side of us just in case. Of course, we know that Republicans like Carrie Lake often talk about guns. They put up Christmas photos of themselves and their family members, even their young kids, holding semi-automatic rifles. This is just a regular occurrence on the right. If you'd like to see the rest of that video from today's guest, Robert Reich, you can find a link to all of his work at yourcallradio.org. On today's Your Call, Robert Reich joins us to discuss this political moment, Trumpism, Joe Biden, the debate, why Democrats are losing elections to far-right anti-abortion extremists, and more. If you'd like to join the conversation to talk about what you make of this political moment, Robert Reich has been at this for decades. So if you have any questions for him, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Robert Reich is co-founder of Inequality Media Civic Action, a nonprofit that uses the power of storytelling to inform and engage the public about inequality and the imbalance of power. Robert Reich writes at robertreich.substack.com. He's the author of many books, including The System, Who Rigged It, How to Fix It. He's the Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley and former Labor Secretary under Bill Clinton. Hi, Professor Reich. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, good morning, Rose. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, Professor Reich. As I said, you've been at this for decades. What do you make of this political moment we're in?
Well, it's a grim time, obviously, not just for Democrats, but for the whole country, for Republicans as well. And when I say grim, I mean that no emerging candidate in terms of the presidential race, the vice presidential race, etc., no emerging candidate has ignited the hopes of people very much. I think it is more the anger. I don't know if you had a chance to watch last night's Republican convention kickoff. But normally, Rose, because it's not prime time and it's not carried by the major networks, in normal years when you have conventions, the first night is sort of the night where the raw meat is thrown out at the base. And normally, and particularly in Republican conventions in recent years, that first night has been a night of demonizing Democrats. Well, there was some of that last night, but I was struck by how almost, I hate to use the word gentle as an adjective in describing the Republican convention, but it was not as sharp and as angry as others have been. I think in the wake of the Saturday assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life, word went out, just cool it, just calm the rhetoric down. And obviously, I think that's a good thing.
But Professor Reich, we did a show yesterday about the assassination attempt and the media's failure. We should say major media cable shows, mostly broadcast, but also some print, failure to really give that moment the context it needed. I mean, overall, the media have done a great job of writing about and talking about the violence we've seen, the political rhetoric we've seen on the far right. I mean, authors have told us, Vox has a piece about how Republicans are afraid to take on Donald Trump because they don't want to put their families' lives in danger. What are your thoughts on that?
It's interesting, Rose. In 2016, actually the end of 2015, when Donald Trump was just getting involved in the presidential race the first time, I talked to a good friend of mine who is at that time, he was a former major Republican official. I don't want to use his name because I don't want to get him in trouble or worse. I said to him, you know, why haven't you come out against Donald Trump? Why aren't more Republicans coming out against him? He said, we frankly fear for our lives. And I was shocked. At first I thought he was joking, but there was such and he felt it. He was a major official in the United States government. He felt that in his state, people were so angry and the anger had been stirred up to such an extent by even the beginnings of the Trump candidacy that he didn't want to risk it, and he didn't want to risk it for his family. And I've heard that again and again since then. Right. So undoubtedly, in terms of context, the underlying political violence in America, which has always been there, but it had got much worse beginning at the start, right from the start of Trump's campaign, first campaign in 2016.
You regularly do interviews on the cable shows. You post the videos that we played at the top of the show on a regular basis. You keep a very close eye of media coverage. In fact, you also write a column for The Guardian. Professor Reich, what do you think of major media coverage of this election, given that so much is at stake?
Well, I'm a critic of major media, Rose. It's easy to be a critic. I do respect what journalists try to do, and I am, you know, hats off to them. It's in a difficult time. In fact, somebody who was there as a journalist at the Saturday rally in Western Pennsylvania told me that she thought that the journalists were being blamed right there by the public, right there as Trump was escorted from the stage. The journalists were being pointed at by angry members of the public. But I do think that there has been a failure of journalism in terms of not keeping the public reminded of what Trump did in his first term, his big lie and the consequences of that big lie, not allowing people to understand that this is not just a both sides-ism. It's not just that the, you know, Democrats, Biden is not liked because he's old, or is not popular because he's old, and Donald Trump is not popular among certain groups because he's acts a little bit crazy. No, it's not that. It's not both sidesism, and the media continue to play as if we are in a media environment in which you have to give equal weight to both sides, find something to say that will balance things out. I do think that there is a failure to understand that democracy does hang in the balance here. And the media has some responsibility in terms of making that clear to people and putting this in historic context.
Professor Reich, it's really interesting that we rarely talk about the Electoral College in this country. We've done shows with Harvard professors. They wrote a book called Minority Rule, Professors Ziblatt. And they talk about how the United States has one of the most undemocratic systems in the world. And yet this is rarely discussed, that we do not have a winner-takes-all system. This is highly unusual. And so you've got a guy like Donald Trump, who did not win the popular vote, take the White House for 4 years and appoint three far-right conservatives who will be on that court for life. Why don't you think we spend more time talking about this, Professor Reich, with all the talk about democracy? Why don't we spend more time talking about the Electoral College and how undemocratic that is?
Well, it's not sensational, Rose. And you know, again, I don't want to tar with too broad a brush, but in this country, in terms of the media, generally speaking, there is not a willingness to be technically boring. I mean, the Electoral College, I don't think it is boring. I think it's critically important that people understand why the Electoral College goes in one direction and the popular vote can go in a different direction, why we're not a democracy. And by the way, another major factor in understanding our lack of democracy is what the Supreme Court has done in terms of opening the floodgates to big money in American politics, and the degree to which not only Citizens United, but go back years before Citizens United to Buckley versus Valeo, the court continuously has opened the gates to more and more corporate money in American politics, which has squelched the voices of average people and made it very, very difficult to have any kind of a politics that reflects what it is that people actually want. The Electoral College is bad enough. The dominance of big money, which is getting more and more dominant in American politics, is just as bad, if not worse, than the perversions of the Electoral College. But then we've got to add on to that what it looks like Donald Trump, at least according to what he has said and what his assistants, many of them who put together something called Project 2025, have asserted will happen or should happen in a second Trump administration. Well, this all becomes, I think, it makes the concept of democracy very, very tenuous.
We're actually doing a series on Project 2025. Tomorrow, we're going to dive deeper into the Heritage Foundation and the 110 far-right groups behind Project 2025. Today, we're spending the hour with Robert Reich, co-founder of Inequality Media Civic Action. He writes at robertreich.substack.com. He also writes a column for The Guardian. You've probably seen the videos that he puts out on a regular basis. They've been seen by hundreds of thousands of people. If you have any questions for Professor Reich, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Professor Reich, since you were Labor Secretary under Bill Clinton, I just wonder what your thoughts are about why Democrats are losing to extremists who are against abortion, even in cases of rape and incest. I mean, we can talk about the Electoral College, but the fact of the matter is these races are close. Just a reminder, Hillary Clinton got almost 66 million votes. Donald Trump got almost 63 million votes. And then you look at the Trump-Biden race, Biden got 81.2 million, Trump got 74.2 million. I mean, the fact is Trump's getting almost half the vote. Half of the country does not vote, we should also say. And let's take a look at the J.D. Vance race in Ohio. He ran against Tim Ryan. J.D. Vance got 2.1 million votes. Tim Ryan got 1.8 million votes. We can go down the line, Professor Reich. Given that 70% of the population is pro-choice and pro so many other progressive policies, why are Democrats losing to such far-right extremists?
Well, it's a big question, Rose, and I'll try to give you a short answer, but we can explore it in greater and greater depth. I think the issue of abortion is one of the hardest issues for Republicans, and this is why, everybody from Donald Trump down has tried to duck the issue, because they know that the preponderance of opinion in this country, not just among women, but among men as well, is we should have freedom of choice with regard to our reproductive rights and our bodies. The government has no business stepping into that. And Roe v. Wade was the law of the land until Alito and Trump's appointees and Clarence Thomas took it away without any even good ratio or good rationalization. But the underlying question you asked, why, despite the unpopularity of these kinds of positions, are so many people still voting Republican? I think it has a lot to do with what has happened to the working class over the last, 40 years. I mean, I was there in the 1990s. I saw, as Secretary of Labor, how people's wages adjusted for inflation were going absolutely nowhere. That's been the case for most of the working class. We're talking about people who live by, our non-supervisory workers live by hourly wages. That's been the case for almost, actually over 40 years right now. And I think at some point, there is a kind of an anger, a desperation, an anxiety, a frustration, I'm just not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to accept this any longer. Most of the gains from the economy over the last 40 years has gone to the top. But here's the thing. Instead of pointing that out, Democrats
have been going after the suburban swing vote. Mm-hmm. They have been drinking at the same financial trough as the Republicans in many cases. The Democrats and the Democratic Party have not been willing to point out the depredations of big corporations. The fact that, for example, most of the reason we have seen prices still very, very high, inflation not really coming down in terms of food and oil and energy and rents. And a lot of this has to do with the power of big corporations in terms of their pricing power. Joe Biden has mentioned this, but it has not been a central tenet of Democratic rhetoric and Democratic messaging. Meanwhile, the Republicans have taken on cultural populism, you know, the East and West Coast elites, the people of Hollywood, the deep state. I mean, they've conjured up a kind of a cultural populism that fills the void left by the failure of the Democrats to take on economic populism. And that's been it's been a recurring problem for the Democrats. Even last night at the Republican convention, I was surprised to see one of the leadoff speeches by the president of the Teamsters Union. Talking about unions, trying to woo the working class, trying to pretend that the Republican Party is a friend of the working class, when in fact the Trump administration, we saw between 2017 and 2021, did everything they could to make it difficult for working people to get ahead. And we could talk about that as well. But it's the Democratic Party's failure to speak to economic populism that I think has allowed the Republican Party to claim the populist mantle at a time when so many Americans are so angry and frustrated by the economy.
In case anyone missed this, Sean O'Brien, the union chief of the Teamsters, became the first Teamster ever to address the Republican National Convention. And you can find that at yourcallradio.org. We have a number of calls on the line, and we'll get to those right after a break. One more question about this, Professor Reich. The Poor People's Campaign has some statistics out that deserve so much more attention, and I'm so glad that we're having the Reverend William Barber on the show next Tuesday. He's out with a new book called White Poverty. According to the Poor People's Campaign, there were 140 million people in this country who were poor or low income before COVID. Next Tuesday, I'll ask him for updated numbers, but I mean, this is half the country almost. 250,000 people die from poverty every year, according to Columbia University. And yet, this is hardly discussed, Professor Reich. I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders, when he goes on the Sunday shows, he talks about this on a regular basis. But it's pretty hard to find other Democrats who have national profiles who really talk about what poor and low-income people are dealing with in this country.
Exactly. And I think what I want to stress with you, Rose, is that the fear of so many people in this country is to fall into poverty. They see it around them. They see it in their own families. Those data you just shared with us from Reverend Barber, and by the way, he's terrific, and please give him my best. Those data really refer to the chances of any family, of any individual falling into poverty over the course of their working lives is very, very high. And this, I want to remind you and all everybody who's listening, we are ostensibly the richest country in the history of the world. We can certainly afford to do better by our poor and working class. We can make this there's no reason why we have to have taxes as low as they are on millionaires and billionaires. There's no reason why we can't do far more for our people. But it comes down to politics. It comes down to the issues we've been talking about, which is the failure of the Democrats to embrace economic populism and creating a void in which Republicans have taken over with this message of cultural populism. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we're spending the hour with Robert Reich, co-founder of the Inequality Media Civic Action, a nonprofit that uses the power of storytelling to inform and engage the public about inequality and the imbalance of power. Professor Reich regularly posts videos about current issues of the day. We played one about J.D. Vance, another one about Christian nationalism. He writes at robertreich.substack.com. And he is former labor secretary under Bill Clinton. Robert Reich is also Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll continue our Project 2025 series by talking about the Heritage Foundation and the more than 110 far-right organizations behind it. We will also follow the money. Trump is trying to distance himself from it because it's getting so much attention. It actually got an amazing spread in People magazine, which means people going to the doctor and the dentist are reading about this. He says he has no knowledge of the people behind it, but several of its authors have held key positions in his administration and current campaign. You can find our past shows about Project 2025 at yourcallradio.org. Today, we are spending the hour with Robert Reich, co-founder of Inequality Media Civic Action. He writes at robertreich.substack.com, and he's Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley. You can find all of the videos that he creates. He's also an amazing artist at yourcallradio.org. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Professor Reich, before we get to calls, I got to say, the piece about Project 2025 in People magazine was so well done. I mean, it's amazing to think people at the dentist are reading about Project 2025.
You are, Rose. It's one of the most frightening documents I've ever read, in terms of everything from taking away women's rights over their bodies to replacing the entire federal, you know, all of the federal employees with loyalists, presumably to Donald Trump, to imposing the government's and Trump's will over agencies like the Federal Reserve Board that have to be independent. I mean, everywhere you look in public life, that Project 2025 would alter. It's amazing to me, and it was. Trump is trying to distance himself from it, but it's not just a few of his high-ranking people were behind it, but the latest data I have seen show that about 135 Trump employees from the first Trump administration were actually involved in putting that together.
Right. And we should say that the head of the Heritage Foundation, Kevin Roberts, yesterday said that his top pick for VP was J.D. Vance. And before we take calls, since you brought up Project 2025's plan to fire more than 50,000 civil servants and then replace them with MAGA loyalists, let's play a clip about that. Here is J.D. Vance on ABC's This Week on February 4th.
We need to litigate the 2024 election about those issues. You guys are obsessed with talking about 2020. I'm happy to answer the questions, but I think it's a disservice to the American people that you're so preoccupied with it.
Well, it's the President Trump is preoccupied with it, is too. He's the one who's talked about pardoning those who participated in the riots. And you did this answer the question. You would refuse to recertify the election. I do want to talk about the agenda for 2024. You also have laid out very clear advice for what you want Donald Trump to do. Let's listen.
I think that what Trump should do, like if I was giving him one piece of advice, fire every single mid-level bureaucrat, every civil servant in the administrative state, replace them with our people. And when the courts, because you will get taken to court, and then when the courts stop you, stand before the country like Andrew Jackson did and say the Chief Justice has made his ruling, now let him enforce it.
Fire everyone in the government, then defy the Supreme Court. You think it's okay for the president to defy the Supreme Court?
No, George, I did not say fire everyone in the government. I said replace the mid-level bureaucrats with people who are responsive to the administration's agenda.
Every civil servant in the administrative state.
No, George, I said the mid-level bureaucrats, and one of the problems that we have in this government.
You said every civil servant in the administrative state.
Let me finish the answer, George.
That was J.D. Vance on ABC's This Week on February 4th. Well, we've got a number of callers who've been waiting patiently to speak with Professor Robert Reich. So let's first hear from Elizabeth in San Francisco. Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you for holding.
Thank you so much. Dr. Reich, Robert Reich, you were during the Clinton administration. Unfortunately, as a Chilean American at 11 years old when there was a coup in Chile, the word democracy, American democracy, meant very little to me because of the U.S.-sponsored coup against the democratically elected president. The reason I'm bringing this up is because the whole term of democracy is lobbied around all over the place when there have been, the rest of the world knows what American democracy stands for. In many instances, both Democratic and Republican administrations have imposed dictatorships all around the world with 800 bases right now. Democrats have made it very easy for this fascism to come about, especially because people don't realize there's any difference now. They realize that there really isn't much difference if you have a Democratic administration sending our billions of dollars of tax money to Gaza to kill children and to kill healthcare workers and journalists. During the Clinton administration, we had welfare reform, which has sent more than 40 million children in poverty, into poverty. Mothers don't have any child care. The repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act allowed the banks to ransack the Americans. The Telecommunications Act allowed for media conglomerates that now we can't even get any kind of third-party candidates or alternative voices on the air. You know, right now, thankfully, we have a Rose Aguilar here who many times presents very good information. And so basically what I'm proposing to people is to organize a united front for a labor party and be able to deal with a friggin' dictatorship, not tolerate, but deal with and fight against the dictatorship at home, because that's what we have been imposing upon everybody else in the world. We don't like it. That's exactly what we've been imposing upon everybody else. So let's deal with that and fight it, and also support other people around the world against this kind of oligarchy that we have in this country, which both Democrats and Republicans are responsible for.
Well, thank you for the comments, Elizabeth. Professor Reich, your response?
Well, Elizabeth, I sympathize, and I not only sympathize, but I've been making many of the same arguments you've made. I think that our two parties, although one of them has become a neo-fascist party, the Democrats have not. But the Democrats have not been a labor party, even as they were in the 1930s. The old Franklin D. Roosevelt coalition has fallen apart. So your notion of creating in the United States a true labor party is something that I would be very enthusiastic about. It's hard to create a third party in America because of the winner-take-all phenomenon. I mean, that most of our elections, most state elections, most of our senatorial elections, and indeed the Electoral College, as we were talking about before, has embedded in it a winner-take-all philosophy, a winner-take-all mechanism, which makes it extremely difficult, as we've seen over our history, for a third party to emerge. So we are left in election after an election after election with people saying, well, wait a minute, I don't really like either candidate, but I'm going to have to vote for the one I like best of the poor choices. In most parliamentary systems in Europe, for example, that don't have a winner-take-all mechanism, it is possible for people to vote for their own party, and it's possible for that party to have representation in parliaments. And that's why you have labor parties in much of the parliamentary systems of Europe and elsewhere. I think that would be it's hard to change our system, obviously, but if we did, I think that's one change that would be a great boon to democracy.
Well, thank you for the call, Elizabeth. You might want to listen to the show we did last month with Jonathan Blitzer, who wrote a book called Everyone Who Is Gone Is Here, The United States, Central America, and the Making of a Crisis. Thank you for the call. Let's go next to John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Hi, John. Are you still with us?
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Hello. I'm actually in Berkeley.
Oh, sorry about that.
And I have a story about Secretary Reich. And first of all, I want to say hello and thank you, Rose, and thank you, Mr. Secretary. And a book recommendation I have, but also the comment is that we, I am a historian, and we should call this what it is, which is fascism. And one of my specialties at university was the study of fascism, how the Nazis took the Weimar Republic and turned it into Nazi Germany. And there's a book called The Nazi Seizure of Power, and it's a playbook. You start with the school boards, and you take over the administrative apparatus, and then you take over the police, and then you take over the courts. And the final rule is that once you seize power, you never let it go. Hmm. And if you don't win an election, you say it was a fraud.
Well, thank you for calling, John. I've actually been thinking about doing a show about exactly what you're talking about. I just found the book, The Nazi Seizure of Power, The Experience of a Single German Town, 1922 to 1945, by William Sheridan Allen. Thank you. We'll check it out. Professor Reich, you've done quite a few videos about fascism. To a lot of people, that's what makes this moment so frightening when you look at what is really at stake if Trump wins again.
Yes, indeed. I think John's point is very important. The media in the United States has at least begun to talk about authoritarianism, and the Republican Party as becoming authoritarian. But it has not yet embraced the word fascism or neo-fascism. And there is a difference. I mean, authoritarians are essentially, they don't believe in democracy, but they don't go as far as fascists in terms of really turning the state into a vehicle for imposing the will of a Führer or a very small group of people at the top on everybody else without any exception, without any willingness to bear any dissent at all. And I think we are coming close in the Republican Party, particularly in its denial of what happened in the 2020 election. I want to just focus on that because we've been talking about some of the problems and some of the failures of the mainstream media, and the failure to resurrect or point out that we have a candidate for president who refuses to accept the outcome of a previous presidential election is extraordinary. It is fascist. It should have disqualified him from the start. I think many people who I speak with who are not in this country find it extraordinary that we can have a candidate for office who still refuses to accept what happened in the previous administration and the previous election.
Just quickly, Professor Reich, I'm glad this is brought up because I almost forgot about this. I wanted to ask you about Trump meeting with Viktor Orban recently. It was last week. It hardly got attention. And Professor Reich, in May of 2022, we did a show about U.S. conservatives proudly embracing authoritarianism by hosting CPAC in Hungary. And I was kind of shocked that it didn't get more attention. Orban has embraced the racist, quote, great replacement ideology. I'm sorry to have to say this, but he called the spread of LGBTQ+ rights gender madness. What the West is doing is committing suicide through immigration. I mean, I can go on and on and on. So Orban traveled, I'm reading from Axios, traveled to the United States after meeting with Vladimir Putin in Moscow on what he described as a peace mission. Orban posted on social media that he and Trump had discussed ways to make peace, adding, quote, he's going to solve it. A Trump campaign spokesperson confirmed the meeting, but did not offer comment on what was discussed. As Axios points out, Trump has previously described Orban as one of the strongest leaders anywhere in the world. I mean, Professor Reich, if Obama had met with Orban, we would all be talking about it right now. And yet, I'm sure a lot of people don't even know this happened.
A lot of people don't know what happened, Rose, and a lot of people don't even know what Viktor Orban is or who he is or what he represents. And let me again stress, Orban is the right wing, as far right as you can go in Europe. Orban wants to cozy up to dictators like Putin, and then Orban meets Putin, and the next move is to meet Trump. You're right. CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, had its meeting there in Budapest with Orban. Orban has been a major speaker at CPAC. You also have Tucker Carlson, who has had his show, his former Fox News show, right there in Budapest, and praises Orban. Orban represents really the negation of democracy. Not quite fascism. Orban has not embraced the term fascism, and other people haven't described him as a fascist, but certainly authoritarian and anti-democracy. And you're right. It should have been, and it's staggering that, you know, a presidential candidate from one of our major parties meets with Viktor Orban, and there is almost no discussion.
And on Face the Nation recently, J.D. Vance said that Viktor Orban has made some smart decisions, particularly about taking over universities. And you can find more information on that easily by doing a search. Today, we're speaking with Professor Robert Reich, founder of Inequality Media. He writes at robertreich.substack.com. And he is Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at UC Berkeley. Let's go next to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg. Thanks for holding.
Hello. Thank you. A couple of points. I'm not sure how far Trump would have to go with the Republicans before they were called fascists, right? Whether that's the Supreme Court or the Republican Party or Trump. So that's one thing. I think there's an element of irrationality on the part of too many people in the country, especially those people who are supporting Trump. I mean, I don't know how anybody who claims to be MAGA and supports Trump wouldn't ask a simple question of themselves. What did Trump do for you when he was in office for 4 years? Did he raise the minimum wage? Did he make your working conditions better? Did he make health care better for you? It's irrational. He didn't. The Democrats haven't done a much better job, so that's one of the reasons why people turn to the Republicans. Finally, I just want to say something about the Teamsters. I listened to, is it Sean King? I think he's the head of the Teamsters speaking. I couldn't believe that I was hearing him at the Republican convention. I mean, what he laid out is accurate, but saying that to the Republicans is like talking to the wall. If he thinks the Republicans are going to give him what he was talking about, he's just deluded. So, like I said, I think there is an incredible amount of irrationality on the left, I mean on the right, with regard to Trump. And I don't know how you convince people who are rational. This is the real problem there.
Well, thank you, Greg. I mean, we talked earlier about why Democrats are losing so many people to people like Trump and J.D. Vance. I mean, he is the senator of Ohio. He beat Tim Ryan. We have a number of emails along the lines of Leslie's. Leslie writes, President Biden is a terrible speaker, is showing his age, gives excuses, and has very poor campaign management. Biden's best at this time is questionably not enough. Importantly, the accomplishments of his current term of office are not widely known. The election is not about being a nice guy. This is about saving our democracy. The voters need to hear from the Democratic Party a strong, decisive voice and a bold campaign with a new leader. We're getting a lot of questions like this and comments like this, Professor Reich. What are your thoughts?
Well, it would be very, very difficult at this late stage for the Democrats to shift to a new candidate, even if Biden were to bow out. And I don't see any evidence that he is willing to do that. In fact, quite the contrary. There are a lot of scuttlebutt, a lot of newspaper stories, a lot of media attention to the possibility that there may be pressure being brought to bear on Biden. But I have absolutely no idea. I am nervous, frankly, about Biden's age, but also his inability or the difficulty he seems to have in getting across points that need to be made. I think very highly of Biden and Biden's record. Greg was mentioning, the head of the Teamsters talking last night, talking to Republicans like talking to a wall. But let's keep in mind, Biden's record on labor and on working people is much better than the record of not only every Republican in recent history, but also the record of Barack Obama and Bill Clinton with regard to working people. Biden has a National Labor Relations Board that is the strongest pro-union board in the last 50 years. He changed the overtime rules that Trump pushed backwards, making it when Trump made it harder for more working people to get overtime. Biden did the opposite. He made it easier for more working people to get overtime. Biden has—it's been on picket lines. Biden has been kind of made labor unions once again a central focus of the White House, and of course the Trump Republicans they have hated unions. J.D. Vance has gone on the record as being anti-union in every respect in Ohio. So it's extraordinary to me that Democrats have not been able to get this word out. And again, we're back to the question of Biden as a messenger, as a spokesperson. And I'm frankly worried.
There is an interesting piece in the Washington Post about Biden recently meeting with Senator Bernie Sanders and Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. They are throwing their full support behind Biden. And Senator Sanders tweeted that after the meeting, at a time when the billionaire class has never done better and we're experiencing unprecedented income and wealth inequality, President Biden laid out an agenda that speaks to the needs of the working class. In his first 100 days, he will expand Social Security and Medicare benefits, lower childhood poverty by making the child tax credit permanent, raise the minimum wage to a living wage, end all medical debt, reduce the cost of childcare, reduce prescription drug costs. It goes on and on. Professor Reich, Biden is talking about capping rent at 5%. A lot of people are saying, okay, where have you been? And I think the other thing, Professor Reich, is the Democrats do such a horrible job of explaining how the system works. To say, look at the original version of Build Back Better. This was a bill that frontline communities got behind, but then Manchin got his hands on it and basically slashed it in half. But they never tell voters that. So voters get so angry with them because they're not getting things done. But in many ways, part of the system doesn't allow them to get it done when you have someone like Manchin stand in the way. Why is it so hard for them to explain that?
I think it was hard for Joe Biden to explain it because he kept on thinking that he could win Manchin over. They were old buddies. They from the Senate. They had worked together before. And I think Biden was reluctant to criticize one of his Democrats. We need to focus on the fact that there was so little leeway for Biden in Congress. I mean, he had just a couple of senators. Right now, the House is hanging in the balance. My biggest worry, Rose, to be completely honest with you, is that if Trump wins, it's not just Trump winning. It's also possibly the Republicans gaining control over the House and Senate. And given the current Supreme Court, and given what the Supreme Court has done and said about the powers of the executive, that constellation would itself spell the not only terrible policies, but potentially the loss of many freedoms that we take for granted. So we've got to get behind Biden or whoever is the Democratic candidate. And I think it's more urgent now than it has been at any time in my lifetime, in terms of getting involved in politics, being an activist, and making sure that the wrong people don't get into positions of power as they are lining up to doing. One moment and one thought about J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance didn't appear out of nowhere. Hmm. I mean, very, very wealthy people like San Francisco's Peter Thiel got behind him initially in terms of J.D. Vance's senatorial campaign, sunk about $10 million into it. This goes back to the theme of concentrated economic power at the top and the ability of that concentrated economic power and the very wealthy to put great amounts of money into politics to support people who will support them and make it easier for them and avoid tax increases. I mean, Trump's only major legislative victory, in fact, his only major legislation at all during the entire Trump term, was to reduce taxes on the most wealthy people in this country and on big corporations. That's the that's it. That's all he legislatively accomplished. And, you know, we are, as the caller just noted, we are so susceptible to this kind of emotive, irrational discussion that's going on right now that, well, it not only concerns me, but it's hard to engage in what we need to understand, what we need to, the conversations we need to have right now about avoiding a catastrophe in terms of our democracy. Mm-hmm. Very hard to have them.
Well, we're going to continue to have them. We should also mention, Professor Reich, that the Trump administration rolled back more than 100 environmental rules. I don't know why this isn't getting more attention, but he recently met with oil executives at Mar-a-Lago. He said, give me $1 billion and I'll give you whatever you want. That just means you can continue to drill. We're not going to do anything to take on the climate crisis. So that's also really important. We need to know more about J.D. Vance, and 350.org put out a press release yesterday that's saying he's right in line, obviously, with Trump on the climate crisis. So that's really important. And then J.D. Vance's very extreme views on abortion hopefully will come out in the media. Professor Robert Reich is co-founder of Inequality Media. He writes for robertreich.substack.com. You can find more of Professor Reich's work and his videos at yourcallradio.org. Professor Reich, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Rose, thank you for your show, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. We'd love to have you back. You can find links to the stories we talked about today at yourcallradio.org. We hope you can join us tomorrow. We'll continue our series on Project 2025. Find all of our past shows at yourcallradio.org. Be sure to sign up for our podcast and tell friends and family about the podcast. We will soon put it up on YouTube. We just read that so many people are getting their news now from YouTube, so we need to jump into that. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering today's show. Thanks to Marla Davies for her help in the studio. And thank you so much for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.